I'm Linda Wertheimer, and this is National Public Radio's live coverage of the first presidential debate from NPR News. We have been watching and listening to the presidential candidates debating in Oxford, Mississippi, at the University of Mississippi. Our own Mara Liasson, our NPR's national political correspondent, is there, and she joins us now. Mara, first of all, what's your take on how this went? Was it a successful debate, more for one than the other?
My initial reaction is that it was a draw. I think they both succeeded in what they wanted to do. There was a lot of thinking, at least here, that McCain hadn't prepared very well, that he was going to be distracted and maybe even frazzled or drained by the negotiations over the financial bailout, and Obama had been really focusing on this debate. I thought they both did fine. And a couple things stood out. When they talked about the financial crisis at the beginning, Obama focused on the situation and how Bush and, of course, McCain caused it with their failed economic philosophy. McCain and his whole gambit of this week was to focus on the solution, a bipartisan solution, and how he was a part of it. They were pressed repeatedly by Jim Lehrer about whether the financial bailout would cause either of them to scale back on their spending or tax cutting plans, and neither gave an inch there, although he tried very hard. And I think Obama got across the point that McCain was like Bush, and McCain went out of his way to say again and again all the ways that he had broken with Bush over the years. That was something that is very important for him to do in this election. A lot of talk about Iraq, and again, some of the ground we've covered. The surge, which McCain pushed for, has succeeded. He said Obama focused on the judgment of whether or not we should have gone to war in the first place.
In both cases, they were leaning, and both on the economy and on the war in Iraq, they were leaning on things that we've heard them say throughout this campaign.
Yes, there's no doubt about that, with the exception of the fact that McCain can now say, because, of course, the economy is a weak point for him, the financial crisis has really hurt him in the polls, but now he can say, look, there's a bipartisan solution, we're coming together, Democrats and Republicans working together, and, of course, he was in the thick of it, inserted himself into the thick of it.
The discussion of, the risk, the national security risk. They talked about Iran. They talked about Russia. Both of those are kind of forward-looking problems. They had a long discussion about Afghanistan and whether or not troops should be moved into Afghanistan, how it should be handled.
Yeah, I thought that those discussions, although they kind of went over a lot of well-plowed ground, were not as illuminating as they could have been. The real question about Iran is which is more dangerous, Iran having a nuclear weapon or us using military force to stop them. That is the decision faced by the next president, and they really weren't pressed on that. They went over the familiar argument about whether or not we should have face-to-face presidential-level negotiations without preconditions. That's something that certainly was a big issue in the Democratic primary. As for Afghanistan, there was a lot of agreement there after they argued about it for a while. They both think there should be more troops there. McCain thinks that the same counterinsurgency strategy that was used in Iraq to great success, in his mind, should be used there, too.
Let's turn to the people who are in the studio here with me. Thanks very much, Mara. Ron Elving, our senior Washington editor, is here. E.J. Dionne, who's a columnist for The Washington Post and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and Matt Continetti, who's a staff writer at the Weekly Standard. They are all here in the studio with me. Ron, let me start with you. Winners and losers?
I think that we would have to say that Barack Obama more or less held his own through this 90, almost 100-minute debate. The first 40 minutes were on economic policy, and this may be a surer ground for him in the sense that he has been in the thick of this particular struggle for the few years he's been in the Senate. And he has some background and he has some confidence in talking about it. And we know that John McCain is somewhat less certain of himself when he moves into the economic realm. But then after about 40 minutes, they moved into foreign policy, and this was what John McCain really wanted from the first debate, was a chance to establish an advantage, not total dominance, but an advantage in being the person with the greater expertise, the greater experience, the greater familiarity with all these issues and the many, many years of meeting foreign leaders and traveling in foreign countries. And I think that John McCain did very well at stating his vision and showing how he feels about what went wrong in Iraq and what has gone right in Iraq in the last 2 years and what it teaches us about Afghanistan. But I think that Barack Obama managed to stay with his principles for why Iraq was a mistake in the first place and how al-Qaeda has been allowed to reestablish itself around the world and represents a larger failure of policy than just Iraq.
Matt Continetti, Mara pronounces this a draw. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a draw, too. But I'd have to disagree slightly with Ron. I think a draw with an edge to McCain. In politics, it's never a good position to be in when you're a politician having to explain yourself. And Obama again and again had to explain himself in defense of McCain's attacks. He had explained, no, I don't really want to meet one-on-one with Ahmadinejad right away. He had explained, no, I really don't want to lose in Iraq. He actually used that language. Oh, no, I actually do agree with you, Senator McCain, about the Russia invasion of Georgia. Again and again, having to explain himself, I think, showed a weakness there. And again, the most important line, which McCain returned to again and again, is, I have a record. I've known Henry Kissinger for 35 years.
I've traveled to
all these places.
Right.
You haven't. And I think that once it shows Obama's, you know, he's green. He hasn't been around for a long time. And that's a weakness in this debate.
E.J. Dionne, what do you think?
Well, you know, if it is a draw, it's a net win for Obama because for almost precisely the reasons Matt just stated, the foreign policy debate was supposed to be the debate in which McCain would pummel Obama. And in fact, Obama showed himself to be comfortable and knowledgeable on foreign policy issues. And I think that that when you look at what voters are going to be judging, they need to know Obama's good enough on foreign policy to get to vote for him in the election, the ones who are still deciding. Obama was also very good at constantly bringing the debate back to domestic issues wherever he could, that the key to strength, military strength, the key to our standing abroad is to have a successful country at home, both economically and socially. And I think that's a net win. And I think the biggest accomplishment for Obama is that he got a lot of people who didn't know it to realize he'd cut their taxes. Most people don't believe Democrats want to cut their taxes. I agree on that exchange on Ahmadinejad was actually McCain's best moment. That was the one time in the debate where I thought he pushed Obama back. But on the whole, if it's a tie, it's a win for Obama.
Let me bring in from California, Farai Chidea, who's host of NPR's News and Notes. She's in our studios in Los Angeles. How did it look from the other coast, Farai?
Well, being here on the other coast, I'm a short drive from the U.S.-Mexico border. That did not come up. It was something that we noted during NPR's coverage of the Republican convention. It's too hot. People have talked about whether or not the U.S.-Mexico border is in and of itself a threat for terrorism or narco-terrorism. Hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent. The administration just asked for another $400 million to work on the border fence. And I think it was striking that neither of these two gentlemen, neither of these senators, brought up U.S.-Mexico relations at all, either in terms of the politics of relating to the Mexican government, the politics of relating to legal immigrants here in the U.S., or to undocumented immigrants.
We may possibly lay that at the door of the necessity to discuss economics for the first part of the debate, so that only the sort of most the wars were about as far as they got in terms of foreign policy.
But of course, U.S.-Mexico relations and relations to Latin American nations are integral to the U.S. economy. So I think that it's more than just the question of what's going on here. It's a question of whether or not, despite Senator Obama's rhetoric that it is important to be a part of the world, I think at this point, and this is something we talked about on News and Notes, the U.S. is very internally focused. Although this was a foreign policy debate, of course it was going to start with economics because that's what we're thinking about, particularly economics internally. But we are not isolated from the world, and I think that in the post-debate analysis, the question will arise if really it's important to make ties to the world, which is something certainly that Senator Obama emphasized, how does that relate to the economy of the United States? Those are questions that should have been raised, perhaps, but weren't.
Well, now, talking about the questions that were raised, how did you score it?
Well, you know, one of the things I noticed is at the very end, both of them brought up their personal narratives. Senator Obama brought up the narrative of his Kenyan father and said that he would invest in issues like education. Senator McCain brought up the POW-MIA issue, his time, you know, as a prisoner of war. And I think that Senator McCain made a more compelling case, in a way, for integrating his own personal narrative into the conversation about worldviews. Something else that I think could cut both ways, a double-edged sword, is when Senator Obama brings up a word like invest. Right now, invest sounds like spend to many people. And so education, you can't argue with that. Everybody likes education, but invest, you know, we'll see how people process that.
Matt Continetti, they both did not exactly... they weren't totally forthcoming on how they thought the $700 billion bailout would limit what they want to do.
Right. And that's understandable. I mean, we don't know what the budget outlook, I think, as Senator Obama pointed out. No one knows what the exact budget outlook is going to be. We don't even know what the plan is going to be. We have a consensus, even among the public at large, that there ought to be some sort of plan to deal with the financial crisis on Wall Street. But as of this hour, we still don't know what that plan will be. You know, I was struck, though, I do have to say, these are two candidates with extremely high favorable ratings. Americans like these two candidates. And I think we saw that in this debate. I felt personally, yeah, it was boring maybe in places, especially if you're a political junkie and have followed this for now, you know, more than a year. But this was a very high-level debate between two very knowledgeable people, and it was conducted very civilly. Certainly the best presidential debate I can remember.
EJ, what do you think? Was it the best presidential debate? And
I don't know. I don't know if I would go that far. I think it was a good debate in two ways. One, it was civil.
Well, we always want to see a little more fireworks than I think we saw tonight, but maybe that's just us.
But also, in fact, there were an awful lot of moments that the loose format allowed them to go at each other. And I thought that was very useful because it allowed, you know, particularly Obama, when McCain kept going at him on particular positions, in many cases, it allowed Obama to push back and clarify. I thought, for example, that when it got to the point where McCain said, you voted against funding the troops, and Obama said very clearly, that's not about funding the troops. I was against the funding bill that had a timeline in it. I was for a funding bill. I was against a funding bill that didn't have a timeline for withdrawal from Iraq in it. And I was...
And you were against
the other one. And it was a much better way of saying it than John Kerry's famous formulation, which I don't even want to repeat on the air tonight. And so there was a clarity there, and it allowed each of them, I think, to clarify where they stood in the minds of the voters. And again, because the attacks have come from McCain to Obama, it was a useful opportunity for him to push back.
There was one moment that I thought Barack Obama was about to break out and show some of the fire that his supporters have been missing in some of his other performances, including debates. It was when McCain was saying, I'm going to be this kind of different and that kind of different and that kind of different from the Bush administration. And Obama reared back and said, well, you know, you voted for almost all of his budgets. You voted for this. You voted for that. He hit a rhythm. He had a stride. He said, you're going to stand here after 8 years and say you're going to be that different and lead us in a different direction. And then he just sort of did not have a finishing line. He finally said, that's kind of hard to swallow. But he was close. He was close to hitting that rhythm and getting that kind of forcefulness that his supporters have been hoping he could find.
And in some of the primary debates, early on especially, and also in the very last debate against Mrs. Clinton, Obama could be muddy and not crisp. You know, sometimes people say sounded too academic. I don't have anything against academics myself. But I think tonight they really worked on him. And I think he had a crispness that he normally or didn't have in a lot of the earlier debates. So all that practice did something for him.
One of the things that one of the big advantages that McCain always has in a situation like this is an appeal to emotions. He is a much more emotional candidate, emotional person than Barack Obama is. It seemed to me that that was one of the places where he, you know, he gained ground over Obama every once in a while. Was that, you know, was it showing that very personal side of himself?
I think he displayed kind of that emotional outrage when the subject was the economy. You know, for those of us who have followed John McCain for a long time, he is obsessed with spending. He is obsessed with these earmarks, which Senator Obama, you know, pointed out are a relatively small part of the budget. But I was a little bit skeptical about him playing that spending card tonight, but I actually think he did pretty well. He was able to show that spending is part of this kind of corrupt elite that's running Washington, that's running Wall Street. He put himself on the side of the American people against that. And I thought that was successful. He also did a pretty good job, I think, of painting Obama as a guy who wants to spend more and tax more, even that if that includes, you know, disregarding, of course, the 95% middle-class tax cut. He does want to raise
taxes.
That's
a pretty big disregard.
No, no, no.
I think
it's
that's
a disregard. First of all, you know, 60% of Americans don't pay income taxes at all, right? 40%. So it's hard to square the 95 figure, but he wants to raise taxes on the high earners who pay most of our taxes. He wants to raise Social Security taxes, possibly. So he can make that argument. McCain can make that argument.
But see, again, I think that precisely because of what Matt said, that's why it was valuable tonight, because Obama said, no, that's not what I want to do. I do want to raise taxes on the very well off. And you know, he contrasted the $18 billion in earmarks that McCain talked about with $300 billion in tax cuts. And one number is substantially bigger than the other. But I thought that was a very interesting moment to catch the priorities of these folks going into the next economic debate. And it took 39 and a half minutes of economy before we got to foreign policy, which is, I suppose, also a net win for Obama, since the economy is a better issue for him than foreign policy.
Ron Elving, one of the things we always hope that these debates will do is provide the American people with a lot of information they may not already have had, or a look into the hearts and minds of these candidates. Did we get that tonight?
I think we did, if you paid the kind of attention you would need to pay to really look into what they were saying, and then to follow up by looking at other sources, newspapers, websites, online fact-checking, and so forth, to get a sense of who was being more on point and who was playing fast and loose with some of these numbers. I think if people do that, they're going to have learned an enormous amount from this debate tonight. But even if they just watched it for the full 100 minutes with even a more, you know, casual sort of eye, I think they did get a sense perhaps of Barack Obama defending himself, as Matt pointed out, but defending himself on some points that may have stuck in their minds up to now, that were effective Republican attacks up to now, and they might have seen perhaps just a little bit of a different view of him from that. I think the real question, though, is sound bites. What people mostly see of these debates is not the full broadcast, even if there is a record high audience of 60, 80, whatever number, million people watching it. More people are going to get their impressions from the sound bites they see over the next few days, and we'll have to see which of these sound bites is most effective.
And you know what's interesting? We always say, well, we heard some of those lines and stump speeches before, but we've been covering this campaign for about 75 or 80 years. Most people out there may have heard some of these lines for the first time, and so they get to hear some of their best lines.
It's one of the things that always happens in these debates, of course, is that Republicans who don't want to do as many things as Democrats do have many more opportunities to put the Democrats on the defensive. And that also is an interesting dynamic in this kind of debate.
I actually thought that there was a very interesting moment around that, where Senator McCain essentially called for a spending freeze on all but three items, including defense. And then Senator Obama said there are things that are underfunded, like education. That, to me, was a defense, an effective defense against the idea that all spending is bad. And I think that in addition to the question of who should get tax breaks in America, the question of what should be championed or restrained in spending is one of the places where these two gentlemen are very different.
That's right.
Thanks very much. That was Farai Chaday, who is host of NPR's News and Notes. She joins us from our studios out in Los Angeles. And I want to thank all of you who are here with me in the studio. Ron Elving, who is the senior Washington editor at NPR. He joined us here in the studio, as did E.J. Dionne, who is a columnist for The Washington Post and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and Matt Continetti, who is a staff writer at the Weekly Standard. Thank you all very much for being here. Thank you for helping us understand what we've just been listening to. I'm Linda Wertheimer, and you're listening to NPR News.